Lieutenant Jim Perez. Fairfield Police Department. Crime on the mind. Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
Good morning, Jim. So glad that you could be back with us. Happy New Year. How
good
are
morning.
You?
Happy New Year. Good. Very good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I was going to ask you this, but I don't know if you're able to answer this. Was that in the plans that the chief was retiring this month?
I mean, I guess he's been wanting to retire for a while.
Oh, okay.
But, the opportunity never came up, but I guess this time, he is leaving. I don't know exactly what's going on in the upper chambers, so to speak, but I think, I think he's retiring and he's just, it's just one of those things that sometimes, mm-hmm. You want to stay on and sometimes you don't. And in this case, he's decided to pack it in for whatever reason. But let me tell you, I'll give you this much. I'll tell you this. We are in, I'm not going to say perilous times, but in kind of crucial times, you know what I mean? Where, policing in general can go one way or it can go the other. And unfortunately, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, I guess. But I'll tell you what, we don't have enough time, even in this segment, to cover the exactly what's going on with policing. But I would love to sit down and discuss it ad nauseum or large enough to for people to really grasp or understand what's happening.
Well, we certainly can talk about it for the next 10 minutes. And the reason I brought it up, I know I hadn't prepped you for that, but it sort of dawned on me in the commercial break. I thought to myself, okay, Chief Liddy had been there for almost four decades. And I remember over the summertime when they were debating the police accountability bill, I included you on my wrap up of my 2020 show last week when you said, look, these are going to be huge implications. If this bill passes, we're going to lose really good, longstanding officers and people are going to regret it. And immediately, as I'm waiting for your phone call, I thought to myself, wait, now, is that why the chief is leaving? Now, I understand there's obviously other factors, but, you know, this is a fear that I think a lot of people who have backed police officers were worried about here in Connecticut was recruiting and also retaining good officers.
Let me tell you this, and this is in all honesty. If I could leave right now, I would.
What? You really?
No, really. That's how crazy things have gotten. And
wow.
I'm of the belief that, we aspire to become police officers to actually really not only make a difference, and I know the cliche is, you want to help people, this and that, but that's exactly what it becomes. And it becomes having good people in positions of power to be able to enact change that covers the whole range. So picture it like a stack of pancakes and syrup just dripping on all of it from the top to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the mentality and the honor should come from the top and go all the way down. Unfortunately, we are in situations around the state and around the country where police departments aren't being managed that way. Mm-hmm. And ours is no different. So, and I think what's happening is that, you top that with the way the state has come down on police. Police officers, I talk to police officers all the time, and I talk to them, and we have discussions on how, morale is low right now. And I know that some people don't want to believe it, but I'm actually stating the truth. And I know that people want to fluff it up and make it look like, things are great and all that. But you know me, I just speak right straight. I just tell like it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I have nothing to gain, nothing to lose. I'm just saying like it is. But I will tell you this. There's a weakening in policing in general that has been taking place for the last few years, but really accelerated after this police reform bill. And I think it has not only knocked out the wind out of the sails of most good police officers, but it actually makes us feel like you're not trusted. Oh, we're adding this to the bill because you're not trusted. Oh, we're also adding this because, you have to be overlooked. Oh, you have to do this. And it's not only for us, but it's for prosecutors as well, because they now the chief prosecutor's office now has to submit a report. They literally have to submit a report on every case before it even gets docketed. What does that mean? That before it goes before the judge, it has to be reviewed again by other sources other than the prosecutor. So even the prosecutor doesn't have the power that they used to, at least in the state of Connecticut. And so what's happening is when you start to do this and you go down this slippery slope and you start going down this way, you are engaging in dangerous waters in that, yes, right now, it's a feel-good thing. Oh, thank God. Oh, it's a start. But in reality, what you're actually doing is you're numbing down the effectiveness of policing straight across the board. Mm. And I'm telling you, for the next few years, we're going to feel it. And I'll be honest with you, I want nothing to do with it. I really don't.
I mean, and that makes me sad. No, that makes me really sad. That makes me really sad, Lieutenant Perez. But
it's just it.
It is super understandable. We have, you know, it's interesting, but like I have my father-in-law is a sergeant in the Worcester Police Department, and you could feel his demeanor, like you could feel his aura is like out. It's been out for a while. And he's in Massachusetts. You know, they don't have a police reform bill there yet. But, you know, I find that is one of the most interesting things is that Connecticut was one of the only states that it felt like boom, 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 let's put a reform in place and let's just move forward. Mm-hmm. And
hastily,
I may add. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. I don't feel that we took the time that even Washington, D.C. can't put together national reform at this point, but we just kind of moved on it. So, Jim, I know that there is still time for lawmakers to technically go back to the table, but here's where we're kind of at. So we've seen a huge turnover where, quite frankly, the people who were fighting the police accountability bill, I'm going to be blunt, were mostly Republicans were saying that we can't pass this right now. It passed.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are even more Democrats that are representing our state. So do you even think that anything will be adjusted or fixed in this bill, or do you think it's going to stand as is?
No, I think it's difficult because once you pass something, to sit there and actually nitpick afterwards, it happened with the Affordable Care Act. I mean, you know, first they said, oh, you know, it's 700 pages, just pass it and we'll figure it out.
Right.
And then it turned into a disaster because it created more work for everybody, really, the legislature that passed it, the people that are governed by it. I mean, it's just, listen, my advice, and I hate to say this, and I hate to be a Debbie Downer, and I hate to be whatever, but if you can get out of the state, get out.
Wow. Really? I mean, wow. Like,
because you know why? Because you know why? Because we are heading down a slippery slope. Our taxes are increasing. I mean, there's a boatload of tax increases that are coming in a couple weeks that people don't even realize are coming. I mean, it's just like, listen, we're a small state that I've always been proud of. This is the only state I've ever lived in. I was born and raised here, of course, and I love it. But I'll be honest with you. Right now, other states are looking a lot more attractive to me. Mm. And for many different reasons. Public safety is one of them, but for many other reasons. Because what happens is when you start knocking this bill, shoving this bill down our throats, meaning the police world, what starts to happen is that you start to get the good officers that want to leave because they're not going to stand for it. They're really not.
Right.
Or they're going to retire. And then you get the bad officers or bad civilians who want to become police officers. Because, listen, here's the bottom line. In the last few years, there's been a trend across the country of police recruitment and retention being an issue.
Mm-hmm.
California, for instance, 603% increase in having a problem with officer retention. Why? Because of all the bills that they've passed over the few years that have come against the police. When you start attacking the police, which is really the last wall and really the only wall that protects against anarchy, you are basically putting everyone in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my opinion, can the police still in Connecticut still today withstand crime? Well, yeah, of course we can. But not when you start to say, well, we're going to, you know, we want you to support us in crime, but you may be held liable for A, B, C, D, and E. You know what I mean? Where before, it wasn't like that. And listen, am I four officers having behavioral health, visits? Yes, I am. And I actually wish they would expand that into gun owners.
Mm.
Am I for, decertification of officers if they get caught with, caught and prosecuted, by the way, not just alleged, but prosecuted, with excessive force? Absolutely. I think that once they become done, they should never be a police officer. So I'm not against parts of the bill. I think parts of the bill are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But I'm against the micromanagement part where you're not micromanaging even prosecutorial officials. You're micromanaging the police all because of incidences that happened, not necessarily that were justified, but like were based on dealing with criminals, what we've always dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes hard. Let's just put it this way. It's a deflation that's taken place.
Yeah.
And I think, listen, if any police officer doesn't admit this, they're lying. They're outright just lying to you because everyone in the police world has to feel this.
So you think there are more really good stand-up
cops essentially that are pretty much in the same boat you are, that they are not encouraged to stay on the force. They are looking elsewhere to figure this out. And they would even say as far as that people should be moving out of Connecticut. That's how bad it's getting.
Yes. Yes. And I really mean that. I really do mean that.
It's I know you would never just say it.
I'm not making it up.
I'm not making it up.
It's actually, you know, and the sad part is that, you know, unfortunately, in police departments, the people that sometimes climb the ranks aren't necessarily the best people to manage, you know, a team or to make things happen or keep things going or be accountable. Mm. And so what you start to see is that you start to see like an increase in budget spending. You start to see an increase in incidences, lawsuits, things like that. It's devastating. Let me tell you, a couple police lawsuits can pretty much bankrupt a town. So the immense responsibility, listen, it's bad enough that we have to deal with the immense responsibility of taking a life away, right? We have to deal with all those things, all those stressful things. Now, on top of that, you're going to turn around and say, well, you can't do this, you can't do that. Basically, you can't do your job.
Right.
And so you're left really in a no-win situation. And who's going to be the holder of the bad end of it? It's going to be the towns, and it's going to be the police departments. And so we need to get leaders who are not only aware of this, but have the courage to be able to face all the new things that are coming out and be able to make it work effectively,
but
even in spite of all these bills.
So, Lieutenant Perez, though, because this is in place, you know, so say we see this long-term effect, which I don't think you're far off. I have been fearing this since they brought this to fruition in the summertime. I said, we're going to lose really good people. I promise you that. We're going to lose really good people, and we're going to regret it. Now, say this happens, we see this big overturn in the next year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever. Do you foresee that even if they were to go back, retract things, change the law, change it, or turn it into something that is more attractive to police? I mean, can you even recover the loss that we're probably going to go through?
No, I don't think so. I think that, listen, I am not envious of anyone in power today, whether it be local politics, state politics, federal politics, or even local management of any town or city or state agency. It is becoming, and it will be, an extremely challenging point in time for all these individuals. And I wish them well. I really do. There are going to be some serious problems that I foresee that are going to happen that we're not going to be able to recover from, that we're going to have to just deal with, and we're going to have to just pay out. And guess what's going to happen? In order for all these things to be satisfied, taxes have to go up. It's inevitable. And Connecticut is not large enough to be able to deal with the onslaught of issues. If you look at 168 municipalities that Connecticut has, right? If you look at all those municipalities dealing with their own issues now of fending off attorneys for this, that, or the other, we are – the only way that we're going to survive is to be like California, which means we're going to have to raise taxes high enough to sustain not only all the current social services and everything else that we're doing, but on top of that, all these lawsuits that are going to be coming down and all these mistakes that are going to be made and all these things. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. And I don't think – I don't know. I just don't know what people are thinking about these days. I just don't. We have enough issues with COVID and, you know, and terrorism and all these things that are going on. And now we want to tack on even more issues or more stressors for police officers and prosecutors and courts. And it's mayhem.
Yeah. It's
and
a lot.
That's how I see it in my world. Listen, I might be alone, and that's okay. I'm okay with that.
I can tell you right now, Lieutenant Perez, I've already gotten the phones have been ringing off the hook, which means that people agree with you and that they are standing with you. I've gotten enough messages just in the last 5 minutes for people who are actually just thanking you for your honesty this morning. And I do appreciate it. And that's one of the reasons I think that you are the best for Crime on the Mind. I think that you tell the facts like it is. And we need to know, you know, we need to know the facts. I don't want to see headlines in other newspapers that are trying to sugarcoat something. If this is how you are feeling, then we need to know. And I appreciate your honesty. So thank you. Unfortunately, we have run out of time.
Welcome.
But we'll
you have yourself a great week.
Thank you. You too. We'll talk again next week. That is Lieutenant Jim Perez.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
Well, in a matter of days, there's going to be a lot going on at the state capitol, more than we have seen in months. And State Senator Tony Wong is here live now. Hey, how are you, Senator Huang?
I am terrific. Happy New Year and wishing everyone a healthy and positive 2021.
Yes.
We haven't been back into legislative session since March of last year.
Yes.
It's remarkable.
That's a good word for it. It is remarkable. And I think that a lot of times your constituents are kind of wondering how decisions are made. And I hate to be blunt about it, Senator, but a lot of these decisions, especially during the pandemic, have been made by Governor Lamont and maybe a couple other people in his administration. And that's really about it. It's kind of our local lawmakers have sort of been left out of the mix for a long time now.
Well, I these are unusual times and unprecedented. And I do want to compliment Governor Lamont for his leadership during this crisis.
Agreed.
But I do raise the concern that the current executive powers, where the governor even pretty much said that he's issued over 80 plus nearly 90 executive orders, which are in effect laws that govern people without input from the legislative branch, and most importantly, without a lot of input from people, the shareholders, the constituents, Connecticut residents whose lives are impacted by it, in having a voice in those concerns. So that is a really big issue in the sense of governing, a representative government, that the current executive powers allow the governor to react quickly. I know there's some rationale for it, but it really dulls and dampens and diminishes the representative governance that is symbolic of our democracy. And we're going to have to reevaluate that. His executive orders extend until February 9th, and we're going to have to convene a bipartisan special committee like we did before, which will encompass Commissioner of Public Health, the legislative leaders of the Public Health Committee, in which I am now appointed into, and the four caucus leaders in the Senate and the House, Democrat and Republican. So this special committee will now revisit in the upcoming year, new year, whether to extend that executive power. And it's going to be an important one because there are a lot of positives, but then a lot of constitutional and representative concerns that we need to address. I wish there was a better balance, but we have to talk about it and air it out in a transparent manner to have really effective representative government.
What about vaccinations, Senator Huang? Because let's remember, just before the pandemic, I mean, there were hundreds of people protesting over the religious exemption over flu vaccines. And now here we are. We've got the COVID vaccine that, other than giving the education behind it and showing, you know, public appearances of lawmakers and very important people and medical professionals getting the COVID vaccine, there are no mandates. There are, if anything, there are loopholes for people to get the COVID vaccine, which, quite frankly, COVID is deadlier than the flu. So how do we even backtrack and go back to the argument of getting rid of religious exemptions for the flu vaccine when we don't even really have anything in place for the COVID vaccine?
Well, that is one of the special things that important things that we got to get into legislative session. And, you know, my recent appointment as the ranking Republican minority leader on the Public Health Committee will explore that. And last year when we had that discussion related to religious exemption removal, we had a 20-plus hour public hearing, and people just kind of flooded into the Capitol building and protest and testifying. My concern is, are we going to have that same debate? And if we do, how are we going to manage that representative voice, that dialogue, that exchange of democracy in a transparent public hearing in a COVID environment? People aren't going to be able to come in. And so the first part is the logistics of how we have public hearings and engage in the business of government and committee evaluation and public input. But I think the other part is a greater viewpoint of, look, is it a mandate? Is it a consideration in regards to the greater public health concerns? It is going to be a hot topic among many of the things that we're going to get back to business on to debate. But the rules of how we manage and govern in the legislative process is what's going to be important and set up for the first week, because how we run committee meetings, how we handle public input and hearings, and how we manage to pass legislation is one of the critical parts that people should be keeping an eye on in the context of where's the transparency, where's the accountability, where's the representative voice being heard. Those things are critical as we move forward into this new session.
Senator Tony Huang is here. And something else, Senator, that went into effect January 1st, more parts of the police accountability bill. Now, we kind of heard some of the outlines this morning from Officer Mike DeVito on this topic. What at this point still needs to be addressed? And are we concerned about recruiting numbers across the state?
Well, you know, the police accountability bill occurred in a special session without a lot of engagement, in my opinion. There was literally, it was done literally in less than 30 days in the aftermath, the very important and emotional aftermath of social justice and all the issues and the turmoil that occurred. But here's the problem, as I said earlier, we had a monumental, impactful legislation that will impact public safety and people's lives. But this was done in a vacuum of limited public hearings, limited public input, limited viewpoints and debate of the whole legislative body that represents the engagement. And it was voted strictly along party lines. And that's important to note. You know, this legislative session and this composition of this government in the state of Connecticut is Democratic one-party rule. You've got a Democratic governor. You got a Democratic Senate majority. You got a Democratic House. If you took a look at that police accountability bill, that vote was purely done on a partisan parity line. And that's one of the concerns is without transparency, without public input, without important input from shareholders, which is what we heard about, the troubling aspect of the police accountability bill, it got passed through. And it passed through by partisan one-party rule, and it's going to impact everybody's lives. Those are the reasons. That is a perfect example, Melissa, how we have to be very conscious and vigilant on how governance occurs in these kind of unusual environments, that we don't jam through bills and legislation that impact people's lives, everyone's lives in the state of Connecticut, based upon one-party majority rule. You know, Republicans will work really hard to represent different viewpoints. Even though we're a significant minority, we still represent populations of people whose voices need to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Tony Huang, as I kind of expected, there are still so many things I want to dive into before the legislature meets up on Wednesday. So tomorrow we will do part two, talk about things like racial justice in zoning, recreational marijuana, sports betting, public option for health care. These are also some really big topics I want to dive into. So thank you for this morning, but we will talk again tomorrow morning.
Absolutely. And the state budget deficit, which is evident, and a looming crisis, mm-hmm. and we haven't had a chance to even talk about it in the normal news, and it's going to impact every aspect of mm-hmm. what we do up there as well.
No question. So we're going to dive into that with State Senator Tony Huang tomorrow morning as we do part two ahead of the legislature meeting up this week. State Senator Tony Huang, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Have a great week.
Thanks.
Take care.
You
Bye-bye.
Too.
From the North End to Steel Point and all over Greater Bridgeport, you're listening to Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
And we are connecting with Bob Donovan, our marriage consultant here on WICC 600. Happy New Year there, Bob. How are you?
I'm great. Happy New Year to you. Can't believe it's 2021 mm-hmm. at all.
Well, we made it, my friend, and I'm very glad because yep. this is kind of yep. like every year that we reach a new year, I feel like it's kind of people's opportunity to sort of start over or to fix or to grow more or any of that good stuff. So I'm digging it. I'm into it. I love it.
That was a great lead-in, by the way. I love what you said about encouraging couples to think about there's always room to grow. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely so true. It's very true.
It is. You know, and I think it's this idea, Bob, that no matter how long or how short you've been married, there is always room for growth. And there's always things going on that maybe we don't feel like we have changed as a couple, but everything around us has changed, which then does impact the way we treat each other. So why should married couples consider having what's called a vision for their marriage? First of all, what is it and why should we consider having it?
Yeah. So, you know, this came to me recently just because, again, you know, my wife and I use New Year's just to kind of reflect on where we are, where we want to go. And, you know, when I worked, I don't know if you remember, but I worked at Pfizer Manufacturing. And they really made their vision to be very alive. It was to deliver products to the highest standards of quality, safety, and efficacy. You know who else got a great vision? Is Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Disney could be one of the world's leading producers and providers of entertainment and information. So, like, visions are compelling. They really can. They can inspire and encourage. I know it did work for me when I worked at Pfizer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way with a marriage, too. Vision can, and it really is a brief statement that describes the type of marriage that you want to have. Okay? It can't be long. It can't be a word or two, but a brief sentence, you know, something like to be united, loving team in our marriage at all times, something like that.
Hmm.
So it does help couples to get some clarity around who they are. And again, you know, with life as married couples, especially in challenging situations, you can get confused about, like, who are we?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good example, like, if, you know, if there's some stress with kids or even COVID and work at home, and there's a lot of arguing, like, if you had this vision that, you know, an example, that we want to maintain a peaceful, loving marriage and family in our home. Well, if you had that and discussed that, you can, like, okay, look, this is not who we are. So it does help couples kind of level set, get grounded, get some clarity on, like, who they want to be. You know, it also provides a sense of purpose. Like, again, it kind of, like, with there's so many distractions of life right now.
Sure.
That you kind of lose sight of, like, who we want to be. So, you know, it does provide some clarity around that, too. So, you know, a lot of reasons why that it can work as a couple.
So, I mean, here's the thing I noticed in the title you just gave, Bob, is that, honestly, it was like one goal, essentially. You know, so you said, we want to be a team and make decisions together. So, like, to be, if we're being totally honest, in any marriage, I don't care how perfect or not perfect you are, you got, like, a few things that you'd like to work on. Like, there's a lot that we're constantly working on. And what I like about what you just said is that it's almost like you have a vision, one vision, not I want to make sure that we're cleaning better, that we're doing this better, that we're doing, like, it almost feels like it's attainable because you're saying, okay, this is what I want to know I can accomplish with my spouse. And we agree that this is something we should be accomplishing together. Right? I mean, am I on the right track? It seems like you're picking one thing.
You're totally right. Yeah, you're totally right. Because, again, it can't be that long. It can't be complicated. It really can't. In fact, I'll give you a real example. So my wife, Karen, is not really a vision person. But one thing we did, because we lead marriage ministry and work with couples, is that we landed on a Bible verse that defined who we want to be as a couple.
Mm.
And that became, again, I call it our vision. It's from Romans chapter 12, verse 10. It's basically, I love it. It's to outdo one another in showing honor.
Ooh, I love that.
That's, you know, and that's really it. That's kind of who we want to be. We want to, like, out nice each other. We want to out serve each other, outdo one another and showing honor. That's kind of our aspirational vision of who we want to be. So, you know, it can be a saying. It can be a Bible verse. It could be just a couple words. It could be a lot of things, but it's usually pretty crisp, pretty clear. You could say aspirational. This is who we want to be. So it does help in doing that. I will say there is a caution here that some couples might use it, some spouses, as kind of manipulation.
So they abuse, you know, it. Like, they abuse the vision.
Exactly. I call it the vision police, right?
Ooh, like, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Hey.
Nope.
So, you know, you don't want to do that. You don't want to use it for manipulation or coercion or things like that, okay? It's really for encouragement. And this really helps you get focused on, how am I, you know, keep in mind, to outdo one another in showing honor. Like, honestly, am I, forget about Karen, am I doing my part in showing honor in our marriage? So, you know, it does help. You know, if I can use an example, like, so if you and Derek had to come up with some words, just some words, top of your head.
Sure.
The kind of marriage you want, just some words.
I mean, for us, I think it's just, I would think support.
like, I would love to be a better support for my husband's needs. And I think he would like to secure me more. I think that they kind of coincide. Like, if I were to guess, I know he's listening right now and going, oh, my God, just watch what you say right now. So I think if I were to be safe, I would say he would like to secure me better, and I would like to be more of a support and, like, address his needs.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That would be an easy one to do.
What is it?
You could have a statement about, you know, we want to support and secure one another and meet our needs, like, at all times. I mean, that's something that you can use. So it's just a couple words. You know, it could be, like, if a couple's, like, really into fun, it can be we want to be loving and fun in our relationship. So it kind of depends on the couple.
So do you just have a conversation? Like, is that how you start this whole thing? You just, it's a conversation, yeah, and you, like, write out what are the things you're looking for in the marriage kind of thing?
I'm a pretty practical guy. So, you know, step one really would be to sit down, get some quiet time together, and just talk about, just like what I just did, throw out some words that you want to define how your marriage should be. Just some words. So you start with whatever, 6, 8, maybe even 10 words. Then you look at them, then you pick out 2 or 3 that you both, like you want to support, he wants to secure. Perfect, right? So you kind of start with a bunch, almost like brainstorm some words, then land on a few that are meaningful to both you, and come up with one brief sentence about this is who we want to be. And ideally, around New Year's or maybe your anniversary, just take a moment and reflect on that. Does it need to be revised? Are you doing your part in it? So pretty simple but powerful tool that can be used.
I like that. I like that, Bob. Now, if people want maybe some help in that department, like, I've got to be honest, everyone, Bob did not ask me that question ahead of time, so you really put me on the spot there, Bob. but this is what it's for. This is what it's for. I'm trying to prove a point to people, so it's good, and I'm waiting. My husband hasn't texted me yet, so I don't know if he approves of that vision or not. We'll find out. But if people want help with that process, like, where can they go to reach out to you?
Yeah, so 2 ways. One, I am on Twitter. They can check me with Twitter. So it's @marriagecoachBD or email @bdonovan@blackrock.org. Either way is fine.
Okay, and just so everyone knows, Bob has a lot of stuff up his sleeve, but if you ever have direct questions for Bob or you have a topic you want to dive more into, because these are really short segments, you can email Bob again and tell him a topic you want to talk about, and Bob will bring it to the show. So there's always that option as well. So don't be afraid to talk to Bob. I call him for pretty much everything. I give him headaches, and then I made him join the show. So, Bob, thank you so much.
You got it. And I knew you would be able to roll with my question. I knew you would.
I'm nervous. He still hasn't texted me, Bob. I don't know if he doesn't like it, or maybe he just doesn't want to drive. I don't know. Maybe he's driving.
Well, he's giving it some thought.
Sure. That's what we'll call it. All right, Bob. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks again.